It's never been easier to do a low risk start. And that is like, again, when I tell people or when people ask me for advice, and they're like, I want to start this business, I have this idea, and you know, it can feel very overwhelming because there's so much you want to do. But if you break it down into little bits and you say, okay, I want to test thesis X, right? And then you just put up a Shopify store and do some a little bit of design and put some paid marketing behind it and see if people convert, just to see what those conversion rates are or something along those lines, just to get more data to either confirm or negate your thesis. Like, that's a good first step. Like, you don't have to go out there and create the full suite of products that, you know, might be in your vision, but just taking that first step, I think, is incredibly important.
Emily Matoya Lancaster is the co-founder of Nurture And. After starting her first business, Havenly, with her sister in 2013, Emily was ready to transition to her next big thing. As entrepreneurs know, when you look to start a company, you look at what's happening in your own life first. So Emily followed her life's journey and started Nurture And, a premium nursery furniture company, when she was pregnant with her little one. Coming up, why timing is everything when you launch a business. Emily shares her biggest lesson from launching 2 8-figure businesses. She shares the time-saving ChatGPT hacks for consumer-driven companies. And finally, why it's easier than ever to start a business. This is the Entrepreneurista Podcast, presented by Socialfly.
It's the best business meeting you'll ever have, with must-hear real-life looks at how leading women in business are getting it done
and what it takes to build and grow a successful company.
It's beyond the gram.
With no filters,
no limits,
and plenty of surprises. Emily, I am so excited to finally have this conversation today. We had connected many months ago, maybe a year ago. I didn't even go back and look to see.
I feel like it's been a year, a good year. Yeah, so for sure.
A year in the making. Here we are today. And I'm sure so much has happened in your business over the past year that we can talk about. But before we get into that, did you always know, like growing up as a child, did you always know that you wanted to start your own business one day?
Yes and no. I mean, now in retrospect, I feel like, you know, I look back on my childhood and I can identify different, you know, situations or stories where I was always hustling, if you will, right? Like, I used to charge my dad, like, I forget, like $7 or $25 to like organize his, alphabetize his business cards, right? At a, like a really young age, like I'd refuse to do anything without getting some type of money from it, which I don't know if it was necessarily a good thing, but in retrospect, I pretend like it was my entrepreneurial spirit and like, you know, totally. Young business lady, right? So look, like I feel like my father is an entrepreneur, right? So I kind of grew up with that around me. It was always something like being a business owner and being my own boss and being someone who like builds something from nothing was always part of my MO. You know, I started my first business when I was very, very young. I was about 24 years old. So it's not, or 25. So I didn't have a ton of like real life experience, honestly, post-college. And then I always joke at this point, I'm completely unemployable. So I just have to keep starting businesses, if you will. So that's kind of like...
Yeah, we're all unemployable now at this
point,
right?
That's the thing. Yeah, like who's, you know, who's going to hire me now, right? So instead of that, I just have to keep on doing it, right? So I do think there is something about growing up in a family where, you know, you see your father be his own boss or, you know, create businesses and have employees and things along those lines. And that's kind of just like what you know. So I do think that really contributed a lot to how I've focused my career.
Did you work in his business when you were younger?
I did not. No, he's like, he wouldn't even hire. He's an engineer. Like I'm, you know, like he's like a civil engineer and I don't even, he builds bridges. I wouldn't even know, right? Like way, you know, above my intelligence level. He's always like, you're what? You're selling what online? Like chairs, really? Okay. But the spirit of it, yes. I think, is what growing up with and being your own boss is definitely something that was very appealing to me, especially from a young age.
Totally. So take me back to before launching Nurture And, your first business. Tell me about your first business and how that came to be.
Yeah, so I actually also co-founded a business called Havenly with my sister, who still runs it. So Havenly is an online interior design firm. So for a flat fee, we'll design your space for you. And we do it all virtually. Now we do they do have some in-home services, but really the ethos behind it was online interior design. And we launched the business. We started working on it at least 10 years ago, but we launched the business in like 2013, 2014. So that was really before that whole concept of online interior design was really a thing, right? Like now it's pretty much mainstream, but we had this personal problem that we saw where we were both individually moving into, I was moving into like my big girl apartment in New York in a studio, and she was moving into like her first real house with her husband. And it was crazy how like nothing really existed in the interior design space. So you could either be on Pinterest, do it yourself, or you could hire, you know, one of those high-end interior designers. So that whole concept really was born out of our personal needs, if you will. And, you know, since then, obviously the company has grown exponentially and, you know, we've raised a ton of money and we're a big company now, but the ethos has always remained the same about effectively affordable interior design at your fingertips. And that was kind of my first foray into entrepreneurship, into consumer, you know, building a consumer brand, building a consumer business, and then also just being in the furniture and design space, which is, you know, tangentially where I am today.
So tell me about the process of leaving Havenly and not being involved in the day-to-day anymore and then deciding to launch another company.
No, I know. It's funny because, so for example, Havenly does all online interior design. Now my business, Nurture And, we sell modern nursery furniture effectively. We looked at the market and we saw that there was no real brand that was really built for the modern millennial parent, you know, with really beautiful design aesthetic, but also great functionality, free shipping, free returns, amazing customer service at a great price point. Like nothing like that existed in the nursery furniture category. And that's really where the genesis for the idea of Nurture And came about. And it's just funny. I always joke. I'm like, oh, like, I start these businesses dependent on where I am at the stage of my life, right? Like my next business is going to be like, I don't know, like a senior citizen scooter or something, right? Like, and, you know, I'm joking a little bit, but I think the process is really like, as you grow older and as you age or as you go into a new situation or whatever, there's always problems that you see that you're going to face, right? And there's always opportunities or pockets of opportunities where it's like, oh, wow, this is crazy. Like, I never knew about this until I'm in this stage of life. Mm-hmm. But there's this like big opportunity for this product or this service or something, you know, you are the best customer to solve the problem for, right? And I'm really the epitome of that in terms of my track record when it comes to the businesses I've started. So for example, on my end, I obviously had the background in furniture. I'd seen, you know, furniture brands come up in all other verticals, right? So in living room sofas and outdoor furniture, all these things. But then as soon as, you know, my friends started getting pregnant, the big question was, hey, like, where do you buy the glider from? Where do you buy your crib from? Like, it was also fragmented. And yeah, you could go to like a Target, you could go to like a Pottery Barn, but like nothing really existed that was like that true brand that kind of solved that whole problem for you. And that's when I started digging into it. And you know, I started my own family as well. And so really, I think the learning from that is like, you are the best customer to solve the problem for. You know your customer well if you are the customer. It obviously expands from there, but I really do think like solve the problems that you personally feel and that you personally have an attachment to. And that is, you know, just makes it that much easier for you.
Definitely. And I feel like I hear this so much from entrepreneurs. We're trying to solve these problems that we have and these pain points that we have, and we know we're the ones to do it and can definitely do it better. And I also feel like, and this is me personally, and also have talking to so many entrepreneurs over the years, we always have these ideas. Like I always have ideas, and I've had to stop myself. Like I can't start any more businesses yet because I have to focus on the one that I'm focused on.
I'm all for it though. Yeah, for sure.
So how
did you make the decision that it was the right time for you to start this new business, still being, because were you still involved in Havenly when you first decided to start Nurture End?
I was just kind of looking for, so Havenly, I mean, there was also geographical considerations. I moved back to the East Coast to be with my husband and to start our own family. Havenly is based in Denver, for example. So there were some geographical considerations, and there was just like, I was ready for my next thing, if you will. We had started the business when I was very young. It had grown to a certain point. I was trying to figure out what was the next area of opportunity for me. And then I got connected to my co-founder as well. And it just was a very organic thing. I'm all for, like, timing is a really big deal. So to your point about, like, you know, there's like 15 ideas that any of us could pursue, but I do think timing is really, really key. So for example, when we were started to think about this business, it was, you know, 2018 or 2019, right? And nothing like this really existed in our space. So being able to see that as a potential, you know, blue out, like white space for us to attack was really exciting. And then in general, I was kind of just excited to kind of start, get my hands dirty again, start building something from scratch, and then also take some of the learnings I had from raising a bunch of money or being part of a venture-backed company and taking some of those learnings and applying it to this company, if you will.
Those are going to be my next questions for you because, you know, Courtney and I, we started our first business, Socialfly, 10 plus years ago, almost 11 years ago now. And the reason we were able to start and build Entrepreneista so quickly is because we had all of those learnings from everything we had learned over the years building our agency business. That's how we're able to now, if we have an idea and we want to start a business, we can do it really fast and have all of those learnings. So what are some of the learning lessons that you had from building Havenly that you were able to then apply to Nurture End when you were just getting started?
100%. And the other thing I would just on top of the learnings is also timing is everything. Like in the past 5 years for us, especially in the e-commerce world, there have been so many more tools that have come out that have made it easier as well, right? Like when I started Havenly or when we started Havenly in 2013, you know, Shopify was like barely a thing. Like people were using such old school, but now you look at the, like the tech stack and it is so much easier to start an e-com business, right? Yes. And that's just a matter of time. So I think that's one piece of it. And then in terms of learnings, like I think the biggest thing, so these are two different businesses. Havenly is obviously a tech enabled service, whereas Nurture End is we design, we produce, and we manufacture our own furniture. But at the end of the day, we're an e-commerce brand, right? So it's not going to be, you know, it's not a SaaS business. It's not a tech real, you know, we obviously we sell direct to consumer, but as we've all seen with the market, like that's not really a differentiation anymore. Mm-hmm. We truly are a small business brand, right? So I think the biggest learning I had based on Havenly and just being based around, you know, being around the ecosystem for this amount of years is really taking a step back and deciding from the get-go of what type of business I want to run, right? Not every business is going to be a $1 billion business, right? And if you understand what you're trying to build from day one, you can do a few things. A, you can set the strategy for your business to optimize for what you're looking for, right? So if I knew that, look, like, my company, Nurture End, will never have the SaaS multiples that you're seeing that are out there. I know that my fundraising strategy is going to be different because I'm not going to want to raise a ton of money. I'm going to want to hold on to as much equity as I can, right? That informs that piece. That informs how much you spend on your headcount and how lean you are and things along those lines. That informs how much you focus on margins from day one, right? So all those things, I think the biggest thing I did with this business with my co-founder, Roberto, was what type of business are we, like, what are we optimizing for, right? We did not want to raise a ton of money, which is different. You know, Havenly has raised a few rounds of venture financing, but with this business, we wanted to be incredibly lean. We wanted to not raise a ton of money. We wanted to own as much of the business as we could, along with our early investors. And that meant we had to focus on margins from day one, right? We had to we couldn't just grow at all costs, you know, without thinking about some of those financial type of metrics because we knew we wanted to, again, not give away a ton of the business, which meant not raising a ton of money, you know, which meant that we had to be lean operationally. So it kind of like all, you know, goes hand in hand, but we made that decision from the get-go. So we weren't distracted by, potentially venture rounds or this or that, right? So that I think that's one of the biggest learnings I had, and especially as a business owner, if you're just like that, again, not everyone has to be the CEO of like a publicly traded company, not a ton of consumer companies, IP, like we've seen the news and the markets and things on the signs, but like knowing that upfront, knowing what type of business you want to build, knowing what, even for you as an entrepreneur, like as a, you know, what type of lifestyle you want, right? Like, what are you optimizing for? And that can really help you when you're trying to build a foundation for your business. So that would kind of be like my big thing. I did not think about that when I was 23 or 24 years old thinking about Havenly, but obviously, you know, that's the biggest takeaway. Well, I think I probably injected.
You didn't know what you didn't know. And that's how
I knew anything. Yeah, exactly. And you know, obviously that's not just through my experience with Havenly. That's also being around, you know, a few cycles, a few economic cycles and things along those lines, and seeing, you know, what are the companies that are exiting? What are the successes? Like, how do you measure success, right? So I would argue that's probably the biggest thing.
That is super helpful to hear. I'm so glad you shared that. Tell me about the process now of launching a product-based business. You're manufacturing your own products. You're learning a whole new world. What were some of those steps you took to get started?
And we launched during COVID. So we launched in April of 2020, or I guess early summer 2020. So as I'm sure some people know who might be familiar with manufacturing and things along those lines, like that is like the worst time to launch a business. Prices were so inflated, shipping costs, container price. I mean, it was insane, right? So it was definitely a very new experience in manufacturing a product itself. A lot of learnings there. So I would say it can feel very overwhelming, right? To be like, how do I even create a product from nothing? How do I create this from scratch? And I think our approach was to really, so we launched with one SKU. So in 2020, we only had one product on the market. It was, you know, we call it the Glider Classic, which is the ultimate rocking chair for your modern nursery. We interviewed hundreds of moms and dads to come up with a list of features that we felt like, you know, were the ultimate needs for when you're nursing your baby or when you're, you know, for your newborn, when you're rocking them to sleep, right? So that first product had an adjustable power headrest, it had stain-resistant fabric, power recline, gliding, built-in USB charger, like that all came from customer research. But we decided to go out there with one SKU. And I think that was really, really advantageous to us, especially because my co-founder and I did not have a ton of manufacturing experience. We partnered with incredible manufacturers, but, you know, it was still like our first go. So having a very limited SKU set, I think, was really important to us so we could like get our feet wet, but also from an inventory perspective, from a working capital perspective, like there's a lot of advantages to starting off, I wouldn't say small, but to launching with one product and not overwhelming the customer, making sure that product is good and great, honestly, and can attract a large amount of people. But that was our kind of strategy. And since then, we still have a limited set of SKUs because our whole approach is providing you with a curated set of nursery essentials that are, you know, research driven and customer feedback driven, but we don't want to overwhelm you. But also on an operational standpoint, it's incredibly advantageous as well. I personally, as an entrepreneur, really believe in like relentless prioritization. You know, to your point, when we started this conversation, you can pursue 25 things at once. And it's very easy to be distracted by like shiny objects and like all these things. But like, then you're just going to do 25 things kind of mediocre, right? Yep. And that's kind of my approach to whether it's product development, whether it's anything in general, whether it's leading my team, right? Like relentless prioritization is key and making sure that you're able to really excel. You know, for us, when we launched that product, being able to manufacture the best, market the best, sell the best, ship the best, and then take those learnings as we start to expand our product category, if that makes sense.
Up next, you'll hear about how Nurture And handled the SVB collapse. When do you decide to launch a new product or to move into another category that you have really, you know, mastered that first product or that, you know, one initiative that you're working on to go on to the next?
Yeah, it's all very customer feedback driven. So okay. I still personally read every review. I actually still personally read every customer service response as well. So I'm still very close to the customer. Look, I know that's not scalable, but it is very important for me. And so much, you can start to see, like, when you're that close to your customer, right? You can start to see trends emerge. And what's great about it, again, still, because we're still relatively small, is we're able to have that, like, immediate feedback loop mm-hmm. that can inform our product development, right? And that is something, you know, we're at that point where I probably shouldn't be reading every customer service response from the past month on a Friday night, but, you know, I still do it. At some point, I might not be able to, but I still feel like that is an incredibly important component to being able to be close to the customer and to also tease out what people are asking for, right? Obviously, surveys and things are great, yeah. but, like, there's nothing like hearing it straight from the customer themselves.
Look, when it's your own business and you're building it and you're making decisions based on what your customers are sharing, I totally get reading every single review and wanting to. And yes, down the line, if there's hundreds of thousands, it'll probably be physically impossible. But for at least right now,
I think it's like getting there. Like, definitely can't be done during work hours. But, you know, I still feel like it's like the best resource for hearing what people are asking for, what features they think might be missing. You know, every single review that comes in, I review and read. And I would argue that's incredibly important to any business owner, to hold on to that for as long as you can until it truly does break.
So now we were just talking before we hit record for all of our listeners. We were talking about uses for ChatGPT. And actually, maybe this would be a use. You could put in all of the customer reviews and they could pull out the key themes and trends. So
I know, exactly. The problem is, I looked into this. You have to, like, still individually paste. You know what I mean? I haven't played around in the past week and things have been changing so quickly. I do not believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you can upload just yet.
I don't know. And look, there's so many different tools that are coming out the AI space.
And things are like changing so quickly. I'm just like, I just need 2 more weeks until someone comes out with this problem use case.
Yes, exactly. Someone's probably solving this right now. It's definitely not me because I'm not allowed to start anything else. But someone's probably working on this right now. Maybe by the time this episode airs, it'll be available.
Yes, perfect.
I would love to hear about your relationship with your co-founder. How did you meet your co-founder? How did you know they were the right fit to partner with? Because you were partnered with your sister on your first business.
Yeah. And then this, my co-founder now, Roberto, who has the, a very different background than I do. He comes from, you know, private equity he worked at Goldman for a little bit. And we actually met through like a friend, honestly. And we were introduced by one of my friends who was like, oh, you know, she's an entrepreneur. She's thinking of her next thing. You know, I know you want to start your own business. Like, we kind of started like ideating, if you will. And it just turns out that like our personalities and our strengths and weaknesses really complement each other. And what's been so great is I think, you know, we from the get-go were very aligned about what type of business we were trying to build. We were very aligned on being, you know, our product first, customer satisfaction first, but not, like I mentioned earlier, a very like focused on profitability, focused on, you know, making sure we didn't have to raise a ton of money, focused on really building a business that makes sense. And we were both aligned with that from day zero, right? So I think that's really helped with the foundation of our relationship and as we brought more people into the team. And then the other thing is like, you know, truthfully, a lot of my strengths are, you know, I wouldn't say his weaknesses, but are not necessarily what he wants to spend his time on. Whereas like a lot of what he gets like super excited about, my eyes glaze over, right? So that's what also I think when you're looking at your co-founder, like, and look, I know many, many successful co-founder relationships who do have very similar personalities. But in this sense, I think our secret sauce is that we are very different, but very like very distinct, I guess. So we each have our own lanes, but can come together under the ethos and the mission and really are aligned with what matters, if that makes sense.
Absolutely, which is so important. That's how Courtney and I are too. We have very opposite skill sets and things that we both enjoy doing that we're great at. And Courtney handles operations, finance, like all the things. Like, you don't want me touching any of that stuff, but I handle other things. And you just have to have that alignment and the same vision and mission and that absolute trust that you know that you are both working towards the same goal together. So
100%. Yeah. And just, you know, again, making sure that you're both aligned with what type of business you're trying to build, making sure you're aligned with like what type of team you're trying to build, all of those things is super important as well. But yeah, agreed. Like, I couldn't be, like, I love rounding up numbers and he's very exact. And so there, you know, there's things that like fall into each of our wheelhouses, which as they should, right? So that's been really great for us as well.
Tell me about your team. How many people are on your team now? Who was your first hire?
Oh my gosh. So we were actually very lean for a very long time. We were only the two of us really with a handful of agencies and contractors until about a year ago, I want to say. We brought on our first employee. So, you know, I had my first baby. I took some time off and we were just the two of us, right? And we were revenue generating. Like, we were like a real business. And again, it was just the two of us. But what I will say is that I think that's a testament to how we, between the two of us, we were able to own, you know, a lot just because we had such different skill sets. Mm-hmm. But then a year ago, we brought on our first hire who is an operations associate, our operations associate, just because, again, we are shipping product, we are warehousing product, we hold inventory. So there's a lot of moving pieces there. She's been with us for a year. Shortly after that, we started building out our marketing team. So we have a great brand marketing person, but we're still super small. We're about like seven, you know, full-time employees, if you will, with a handful of contractors and agencies and things along those lines. And again, like for us, like we're very, even before the market started being what it is today, we were always very focused on being lean, just making sure that we were able to handle the team that we were bringing on. And then that there was a real need for it. But we've also found really great agencies and things on those lines, which I feel like in the past 5 years, like again, with like agencies abroad and, you know, we use an agency for customer service like that, all those companies have just like kind of blown up in the past 5 years and they provide really great services for e-com, you know, an e-com store like ours.
Amazing. Any customer service agencies that you want to mention or tech solutions or softwares that you are using that you recommend for entrepreneurs?
Well, we're on Shopify, which, you know, for anyone who has an e-com business, I do feel like they are kind of like I don't want to say monopoly, but they are the go-to now. So our apps and our tech stack is really related to Shopify. So for example, we use Gorgeous for customer service, which we've been pretty happy about because they can pull in data from Shopify and things along those lines. And then, you know, Klaviyo for emails. Like, it's just crazy how, again, like, and I think this is great because now it's never been easier to start an e-com store, which is amazing for people who are either trying, you know, want to pursue a side hustle before it becomes a full-time thing. Like, it has become so much cheaper and easier to just test it out, you know, totally. Which is awesome. Because then you're not, like, investing a ton of money, you're able to really test it out, see if there's product market fit. You know, if you're still a little hesitant, you can still kind of hedge a little bit, right? Because of the fact that all these tools exist that are so user-friendly, but also cost-effective, right? Which didn't exist, again, when I started my first business. So I'm really excited about that. And we were just talking about ChatGPT, like even with that, as that expands and all these apps and all these services from that service, it's going to be a whole new world. And it's going to be make it, entrepreneurship is never easy, but it'll make it, what's the appropriate word? The entry point might be less difficult to really test something out, if you will.
Yes, I say it's easier to just get started. If you have an idea, you can actually start and test and go where back in 2013 when you started your first business, there was many more hurdles and things to figure out and tech that you would have 100%. To build. And now It all exists, and you can just 100%. Listen to this podcast and find out all the resources, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I think you're totally right. It's never been easier to start. It's still hard to start, but it's never been easier to do a low risk start. And yes. That is like, again, when I tell people or when people ask me for advice, and they're like, I want to start this business. I have this idea. And, you know, it can feel very overwhelming because there's so much you want to do. But if you break it down into little bits and you say, okay, I want to test thesis X, right? And then you just put up a Shopify store and do some a little bit of design and put some paid marketing behind it and see if people convert, just to see what those conversion rates are or something along those lines, just to get more data to either confirm or negate your thesis. Like, that's a good first step. Like, you don't have to go out there and create the full suite of products that, you know, might be in your vision, but just taking that first step, I think, is incredibly important.
Absolutely. And you mentioned doing a lot of customer research and studies on the customer prior to launching. Were there any tools that you use, like survey tools or certain ways you set up your, you know, user feedback to be able to collect all of this data?
Yeah, I mean, I wish I was more sophisticated, but like when we did do customer, it was literally just video calls, Excel spreadsheets, you know, Google Docs, writing down everything anecdotally to get the full picture. Obviously, now we have a little bit more of like a marketing type of push with, you know, Yotpo for our reviews. And, you know, I use like Typeform for customer surveys. And then we obviously have like a mail. We use Klaviyo from email so we can actually collect information and things along those lines. But there's nothing, I mean, I'm sure someone out there is like, oh, you know, there's X, Y, and Z. But no, I was just like hitting the ground running and like just talking to everyone we could, you know.
Well, that's how you start.
Which is, you know, the good old way, I suppose, for sure.
How did you go about finding manufacturers, and any advice you can share for someone who is thinking about starting a product-based business or you have to create your own products?
I know, you got to hustle. So we actually got very lucky. The person that the manufacturing company that we do use and that we go through, I've known for many years, in the sense that my friend from business school introduced me to the founder effectively like in 2016, right? So it just came about organically, in the sense that, like, you know, we weren't able to work together at that time, like when we first got introduced, but we like, you know, nominally had stayed in touch. And then, you know, at some point, I think I might have reached out and it just kind of came about organically, if you will. So the power of network is like my biggest takeaway there. So even if, like, call it, we had probably met, yeah, like 4 or 5 years before Nurture And was even an idea. And now we're like true partners and he's on our cap table, or the company is on our cap table. And, you know, we're really able to like be partners in this process. And it is like, you know, it didn't work out at the time. I think we were pursuing something with Havenly, but like, it is funny how in the future, you never know what kind of relationships might rear their heads, right?
Yeah.
So that was kind of, and so in terms of manufacturing, we got really lucky. I mean, in terms of if we're starting from scratch, like the world and global, like the world is so much smaller now with research, with being able to find, you know, there's some really great family firms out there that do this as well. But yeah, we kind of got lucky with this relationship for sure.
What would you say is the craziest thing that has happened to you since starting this business?
We launched in the middle of a pandemic when no one was going into stores. What was good was everyone was having babies effectively because there was nothing else to do. So that was great for us as like a nursery furniture brand. The other good thing was, you know, we did start off as direct to consumer. So obviously there is this like psychological hurdle that you have to convince a customer like to buy a $1,000 item online without seeing it. But because of the pandemic, people were staying at home. No one was going to stores. So that really was advantageous for us as well while we were getting our initial product out there. But I would say being in the manufacturing, and I won't go too much into this because it's a little boring, but like, you know, the prices for bringing product into the United States, we manufacture overseas, was like out of control. I mean, no one had ever seen this before. Things were going, like costs and price and everything was on our margin was like insane. But what I always say is like, we launched in the most insane environment. So that was kind of like the normal for us. So now that things have normalized, we're kind of like, huh, like, oh, okay. Like, you know what I mean? We launch in such a psychotic environment that's what we had to adapt to.
Yes.
But again, when things like get normalized and cost normalized and demand and all that stuff, and we're just like, oh, okay, like, you know.
So now there's like actually easy days.
Yeah, exactly. Easier. We optimized for like when like the ports were closing down and my inventory was stuck for like 90 days. Like that was normal to us because that's all we knew, right? But now, like, I'm like, oh, wow, we don't like that, you know, this is easy. I mean, kind of, not really. But so I would say, like, the whole thing with, like, the container pricing, I'm sure people read about it, but, like, or saw it, you know, if they were buying furniture and, like, the lead times and things along those lines, that was what we launched into. And then additionally, I will say we did bank with Silicon Valley Bank, and that was like a very crazy weekend, I would argue. I would say that was kind of like the craziest thing, or one of the craziest things I've probably experienced as a business owner. We were lucky because we were on top of it. And so for people who don't know, Silicon Valley Bank, basically, I think you might have to correct me on the timing, but like on Thursday afternoon, there were rumors that they were going to go under. You know, Friday, everyone was trying to get their money out. Their website shut down. Nobody knew what was going on. So, and then the government didn't come out until Sunday at 6 p.m. Yeah. Easter time to be like, oh, we'll insure the deposit. So between Friday and Sunday, everything was kind of in limbo, right? And we had just closed our round, and like we did have a bunch of money in there. We were lucky to get out because we had a backup bank. So we were in a much better position than a lot of entrepreneurs or business owners who, like, for 3 days did not know if they could make payroll, right? And I just think being part of that whole conversation and that ecosystem and texting my founder friends and texting my sister, for example, who also banked there with Havenly, like, it was just like a very chaotic, it was the craziest thing I've ever been a part of, right?
How do you handle those moments when these really hard, crazy things happen and you have to still lead and keep going? How do you personally handle everything?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think everything is solvable for the most part. Like, that is definitely my personality, is like, okay, like, and this is probably very annoying to my husband, who might just want to, like, complain about something. And I'm like, okay, but what's the solution? Like, let's come up with solutions. Like, not the best in every personal situation, but
I could just tell you, I drive my husband insane with that, because he's like, just listen and stop trying to solve everything.
Right? Like, I just want to complain. So now actually I have this thing where if he comes to me, I'm like, do you want solutions or do you want to just be heard? Like, before we even get into it, because my brain automatically goes into, okay, this is your problem. Let's break it down and what's a solution, right? So that is how I personally approach problems, going back to the point that I said earlier about just like breaking things down into blocks that you can attack. Problems seem, especially in business, it can be so like big and like overwhelming, like, you know, I'm starting a business. How do I make it into a $100 million revenue business? Like, that is such a big, lofty goal. And that's still my goal. But like, if you break it down into little chunks, so it feels more attainable, it feels more approachable, that is how I try to approach things. And I think that's really helpful, right? So like, in that situation, actually, my husband, who is in finance, called me on Thursday afternoon and was like, I feel like you might want to, like, I don't have a TV. I'm not watching CNBC, like, whatever, right? And then being able to be like, okay, well, let's hedge, let's do this. Let's, like, having steps is really helpful for me. And that's how I lead as well, right? Like, big problem, we might not have money. Okay, let's like break it down into plan A, plan B, plan C. And that also makes me feel like I have control as well.
I relate to everything you just shared. So I think us as entrepreneuristas, we just have a certain way to work and think about things. Yeah.
But I will say, like, on a personal level, it's probably not the best solution, but you know, it's fine.
It's good internally because we're able to figure everything out. But yes, I definitely drive my husband crazy because his brain doesn't work that way. And sometimes he just wants to complain. I'm always like, just come with this. Just come to me with a solution. He's like, no, I just want to talk.
I know. But I'm trying to get better again. But like, okay, if the cable's broken, like, tell me what the next steps are instead of just like complaining
letting
about,
me know. You know,
whatever.
Yes.
Yeah.
Coming up,
Emily shares her tips for fundraising from angel investors.
So you mentioned raising a round, and I know you had mentioned in the beginning, like, not wanting to raise a lot of money. Like, how did you determine it was the right time to raise? What were some of those steps that you took, and any learning lessons from the fundraising process you can share?
Yeah, for sure. So with this round, or with the money that we've raised, it's truly been from what the business needs, right? So we were very prescriptive on making sure we had a budget for, like, exactly how we want to spend it, obviously with some buffer. But we were very prescriptive of, like, okay, this is the amount of money we need to get to this revenue level, to get to this next hurdle. What is it? What type of money do we need? And, like, what is the bare minimum that we need while still continuing to be lean, right? So let's say, even if we did raise a round, it's not like we operate differently. Yes, we hired a few handful of people, but, like, we're still, like, lean. We still, like, you know, is the appropriate word, kind of, I don't want to say criticize, but we still look at every bill that comes through the door, right? Like, you know, none of that stuff, right? So I think, you know, look, like, having a smaller amount of money forces you to continue to be that way. If we had raised 10x what we did raise, right, it would be a different, it's just mentally you have more of a buffer. But, like, feeling like we don't have a buffer makes us more efficient, lean, and really conscious of how we spend, right? In terms of the process of raising, we really went, you know, we still are, call it a seed round. It was a, you know, relatively small amount. Really, friends and family offices and things along those lines were our target. We were still, again, we knew we didn't really want to go the venture route just because we're not really a venture business. And so for us, really, was finding people who believed in us as founders, who believed in what we were trying to build, and who believed in the traction. So each, we had already, like, you know, we weren't profitable, but we're, like, around, hovering around break even. Like, we had really great numbers and really great traction behind us. And so we were able to really present that, which made the whole process a lot easier as well.
How long did it take to raise that round, and any other learnings you can share just about the process of reaching out to potential investors, making lists, how to set up the raise?
I would say probably took about, let me think, like 4 to 5 months. All in. And that's, you know, honestly, because it was on a rolling basis and we had an idea of, like, where we would close it. But, like, individuals, it's not like a true venture round where you're like, oh, this person gives you a term sheet and then, you know, everyone else follows, you know, follows that lead. Individuals and angels are, like, a whole different process. So to your point about, like, how do you organize it? It's like, reach out to everyone in your network, see who they know. They might introduce you to 5 other people and there's 5 other calls. Like, it really is a networking game when it comes to angels, at least in my experience with this, right? And so, you know, you hear people be like, oh, it took us 2 weeks to get from, like, that was not the case for us. I mean, maybe that's normal for some people, but, like, that was just not the world that we were living in, which, you know, we were fine with as well. We were very opportunistic on, in terms of the type of investors we were bringing on. We're very opportunistic with the amount, you know, and then we were in a good place by the time we closed it, for sure.
Did you set it up as angels could invest directly into the company, or was it set up as a syndicate?
We did, like, angels, and we had a minimum check size. Yeah, no syndicate. We did have one syndicate come in at the end, but for the most part, the rest are all individual investors and things along those lines.
We have, in our Entrepreneurista community, we now have a raising capital power group for founders that are raising capital, so they can all learn from each other, network together, that's led by someone. And we've been working with Sidecar. They just came out with a product so founders can do, like, founder-led SPVs. So that way, if you wanted to, like, do your own syndicate and bring on, you know, smaller checks, not with direct investments, then you can do it through their platform.
Oh, very cool. So, yeah. Oh, take a look at that. That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's great. I mean, again, like, so many things between my experience with my first business and this business, like, so many things have changed, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
all the new things.
Yeah. Like, it wasn't that easy. Like, I know I've invested in a few SPVs and things along those lines. Like, that wasn't, like, a thing 5 years ago, right?
No,
like,
it wasn't at all. Was not.
And your minimum check size had to be $100,000 or, like, $100,000, like that. Like, that's also putting my investor hat on, or, you know, whatever. Like, that is a big hurdle to cross if you're required. Like, But with these different processes and with you guys and like with what Alyssa's doing and things along those lines, it's really cool because you bring that entry price point so much lower. And that just means for more investors, more money into it, more entrepreneurs. It's just a really cool way of supporting the ecosystem, which again, I feel like is a relatively new thing, which I love.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's so fun with all these new opportunities coming out and just being able to optimize and help founders, help investors. It's really, really cool.
Yeah, exactly.
So I want to hear about being a mom and also building, growing businesses. I know I can relate to a lot having an almost four-year-old now, which I can't even believe, which, you know, time just
flies.
Four
is such a fun age. I heard three is like three. So my oldest is two and she's very sweet. She's very sassy. But I heard that it just keeps getting better from now. So four. Oh, gosh. But yeah, I have a baby girl and then I'm expecting as well this summer. So I'll be having a boy shortly. And it look like I, first of all, I run a nursery furniture business, right? So like, A, I get free product, which is freaking awesome. Everything I do, like we still have like the original prototype of the glider in her nursery, right? Like I get all the fun stuff, which is amazing, right? And then in terms of balancing it all, you know, I'm the first to say I have like the best support system. I have an incredible nanny. I have an incredible husband who is truly like 50-50%. We'll see what happens with two kids because I know going from one to two can be like a lot more, you know, what's the appropriate word? A lot more cumbersome from like an organizational perspective. But you know how we were talking about how we are both very solution oriented, right? Like what's the problem? Get things done, execution focus. Like I feel like I've actually become more so that way after having a child because when you have so much going on, when you're running a business, when you're working full-time, when you want to be a full-time mom, when you're managing a household, you got to get everything situated.
Every
right?
second like, counts.
Every second counts. And it's like, we hear about the mental load, right? And don't get, that's a whole other conversation, but like you have to be like on top of it. Like you need to make sure that that's not slipping through the crowd. Like it's all project management, which at the end of the day is like the role of a founder anyways. And so it is interesting. I'd be curious to ask my husband about this, but I wonder, and my thesis is that aspect of my personality has just been amped up ever since I've had a child because every single minute counts, right? Every meeting I'm in, what's the agenda? What are we trying to get out of this? Is this a brainstorming session? Is this executed? Because like at the end of the day, I want to see my kid, right? Like that's the whole, like you have to get stuff done. And so I will say that we'll see. I'm only 2 years into this, but that personality trait that I suspect a lot of founders have and a lot of women have is very beneficial when managing your own business and being a mom, honestly. So
what's been the best part for you of being a mom?
Oh my gosh, she's just like so, she's exactly like me. She's super sassy. She's like my poor husband. Like he's like the nicest, most even-keeled guy. And we're both like, just like, you know, like just running around with our heads cut off, right? But it's been fun to see the world through her eyes and like having her discover all these amazing things. And just like, you know, you see the world through a new light, if you will. It's very rewarding. And I love every minute of it. I work from home sometimes. She comes in, she knows, you know, she'll say hi to my co-founder, you know, all those things, right? And that's also been great post-COVID. Well, even with starting your own business in general, people can have, you know, are so much more flexible with where they work and being able to do that is really important. And we have a few moms on our team as well. So that's very important for us as business owners to provide to our team. And that's just been really beneficial for us as well.
So relate to so much of what you shared today. And it's been an honor to hear your whole journey and story and so excited to follow along and see all the big things you're going to do next and can't wait to see pictures of the little one.
Oh my gosh, I know.
Last question for you. What does being an entrepreneurista mean to you, Emily?
That's a really great question. I've thought a lot about this. I think it's about ownership and it's about building your own future and building the life that you want, right? Like, we hear so many stories of, you know, these splashy big businesses, which is great if that's what you want. But there are also people who are creating these amazing businesses on the side or, you know, like, I just think it's like having ownership about what you want your life to look like and what you want your life to look like and being able to create that for yourself and not having to conform to a mold is really important. And then hearing stories, you know, of people who've done it before in the sense that like everyone can, you can do it, right? You just have to take that first step.
Absolutely. Well, Emily, thank you again for being here and sharing your story. Where can everyone find you, follow you? And then for those that are interested in buying your products, where should they head over to do so?
Oh, amazing. So Emily Mattai Lancaster, I am on Instagram. I'm public, I believe. It's Emily M. Lank. L-A-N-C. Sorry, I'm old. I'm like very bad with social media.
We'll link out to everything. So don't worry. Yeah.
Perfect. I like have a TikTok, but I don't think anyone needs to see that because like it's very confusing either way. And then the company I run is called Nurture And. So we are available online at www.nurtureandspellandand.com and then on Amazon and Babylist as well.
Amazing. And again, we'll link out to everything in the show notes below. So if you're trying to find Emily or Nurture And, go head over to the show notes. And we'll also link out to some of the business tools and solutions that you shared as well. So go head over to the show notes. And Emily, thank you again for being here. I'm Stephanie, and this is the best business meeting I've ever had.
Hey, thanks for listening and leaving us a 5-star review. We'd really appreciate it. And we'd love to stay in touch with each of you. You can listen to all of our latest episodes at entreprenista.com and connect with us on Instagram at entreprenistas. We'd also love to invite you to join the Entreprenista League, our private membership community for trailblazing women. You can head over to entreprenista.com/the league. We'll see you there. Wishing you a productive week ahead.